From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
All of us in this chamber had a difficult year together in 2015 as we debated a budget with structural reform.
We have a co-equal branch. We also have a supermajority of Democrats. You can't just suggest Democrats to be voting like radical Republicans in the legislature. It's not going to happen.
He clearly puts the taxpayers first, and at the end of the day, in his speech, he's prioritizing the future for our children and for our grandchildren.
We were all elected to do a job. Our job is to improve the quality of life for all the people of Illinois.
Very interesting. The governor would come before a joint session of the General Assembly speaking to the state of the state of the state of Illinois and decline to comment that we don't have a full budget for this particular fiscal year. I certainly would have appreciated it had he done that.
Well, overall, in his State of the State address this week, Governor Bruce Rauner struck a more conciliatory tone, but as you heard, not everyone is sold. We'll talk about the governor's big speech and where all the dysfunction goes from here. I'm Sean Crawford, and this is State Week in Review, joined by Professor Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our State House studio, Amanda Vinicky, the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. And our guest today, reporter Doug Finke. He's with the State Journal Register newspaper in Springfield. Doug, thanks for being with us once again.
Glad to be here.
Amanda, I'll start with you. Is this a kinder, gentler Bruce Rauner?
It was. We had heard from Bruce Rauner in recent weeks, but really for recent months. Pretty much every time he opened his mouth, it seemed like he used the words Mike Madigan and then some sort of insult or name calling. And in fact, Madigan wasn't really mentioned at all in the speech, save for thanks for being here and kind of the polite protocol at the very beginning of the speech, welcoming all dignitaries to listen. So yes, he said that he wanted mutual respect. He called for compromise. He, I think, notably after a year ago saying, please take this as a package. Let's do this all together in one lump. He instead said, all right, for example, with local government consolidation, there's a report that has tucked in it some of the prevailing wage collective bargaining, quote, anti-union measures that he is pushing in so many other avenues. And he didn't call that out by name, but he said, okay, we don't need to start with the tough stuff. Let's begin on the elements that we can find agreement on, that there's bipartisan backing for. So in that regard, yes, he did take a gentler tone. Nonetheless, what the bulk of this speech was centered on were the same topics that he has called for and that are at the heart of this stalemate, be it workers' compensation. He did have a dig at trial lawyers. He went off on AFSCME for a real chunk of the speech, really, and said that they are out of touch with reality in their compensation demands. And so there was no real change in position from Governor Bruce Rauner. It just wasn't that he did not use the bully pulpit to lob these insults as he has in the past. So maybe it'll work, but it didn't seem that that reaction from lawmakers was ready to buy into this gentler Rauner just yet.
Doug, let me throw it to you. You heard what the governor had to say. I know you talked to a lot of people afterward. Did you get a feeling as though that the governor is going to try to work more closely with the General Assembly and that they will in turn work with him?
Frankly, I'm not really sure how it's going to play out at this point. Certainly some of the Democrats that I talked to and have read their responses took heart in the fact that Rauner said he's willing to work with John Cullerton on a pension reform package. And he's also willing to deal with reform of the school funding formula, which has been a priority of Andy Menar, a Democrat from Bunker Hill. And also this last week, John Cullerton said in a speech in Chicago that that is part of his turnaround agenda now, that as we go forward with the budget, he wants to see changes in the school funding formula. So they took hard in that, but you know, I think there's so much distrust that's been built up over the last year that none of the Democrats at this point are probably willing to just say, oh, well, this is the new and improved Rauner, and we're all going to get along, and he's going to be more cooperative with us, especially when he repeated some of the so-called anti-union things that he's been preaching for the last year, and that sort of stuff just is not going to fly with the Democrats.
Yeah, Charlie, your thoughts?
Well, it occurs to me that the governor was, in a sense, extending an olive branch. Yeah, he had the digs in. It's like he just can't restrain himself. He's always got to throw in some anti-union stuff, digs at the trial lawyers.
Because I think he really believes it. I mean, I don't know if you say, hey, that's bad to always include it because it stirs everybody up.
Well, that's what I would say.
Or if it's appreciated because he's telling the truth, we know where he's at.
Yeah, but I think by now everybody knows where Bruce Rauner is at in terms of unions. He doesn't like them. Fine. Deal with the reality. The reality is Democrats have strong majorities in both chambers. They are not going to gut collective bargaining because this is what the governor's ideological position is. So you kind of agree to disagree on that. And you look at some of the other things. I thought it was interesting when he said that he thought that John Cullerton and he could put together a pension plan that they believe might pass Supreme Court muster. And it was interesting that the Speaker, Mike Madigan, said he was open to that. And he said, at least in the interview that I saw, that he wanted to actually read the legislation first. And I thought that made a lot of sense because you're not going to commit to something until you actually see what's there, particularly after the way the governor misconstrued what the original agreement between himself and Senate President Cullerton was. So that was positive. In the criminal justice area, the governor laid out some proposals for trying to deal with the fact that we have overcrowded prisons. He wants to reduce the prison population by a quarter by 2025. And that's an area that the legislature, Republicans and Democrats, and the governor worked on this past year and showed some progress in the criminal justice area. They can build on that. So I guess what I'm saying is you look for the areas where you can reach agreement, and on the ones that are really hard, where you have deep-seated, firmly held philosophical disbeliefs, you just decide, okay, we're not going to agree on this, so let's agree not to agree, and let's move on to what we can work on.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that would happen in an ideal world. I just think that...
in an ideal world, but it also happened in the world the way it used to be for many, many years in the legislature.
But I think people are waiting to see how long this kinder, gentler Rauner lasts, because he was on a warpath last summer. He kind of toned it down a little bit in the late fall when they started resuming the leader meetings with all these high hopes from people that maybe this would lead to some kind of breakthrough. We went through the Christmas break and he came back from that firing both guns at Madigan, and now all of a sudden we're back to this more conciliatory governor. So I think some people are waiting to see exactly which version of the guy is going to stick this time.
Yeah. And I would say that the comments I made before about finding where you can reach compromise, that's predicated on the belief that the governor actually does want to solve the problem. And it could be that his strategy is that to build the new, better Illinois, we have to destroy everything we have now.
I think there's really mistrust on both sides, to be honest. There's mistrust on Democrats, clearly, with the governor because of, Charlie, as you noted, the bungled pension announcement, a compromise with Cullerton, and then just minutes later, after they'd supposedly met, a mischaracterization of that, then waiting hours, administration walked back from it. Now, supposedly, they are at a deal point again. So there's that. There's all of these, again, really insults is the best word for it. And yet again, you look at it and from Rauner's perspective, and he seems to really feel that that is where things are at and believes that it's Madigan who doesn't want any sort of compromise, because the thought would be that it's better for his Democrats to get reelected to place the blame on Bruce Rauner. So I'm, of course, not saying either way, merely just that part of the difficulty here is, as we've talked about, there's a huge ideological gap on many of these areas that are part of the so-called turnaround agenda. Charlie, you noted there is room for finding perhaps in agreement when it comes to the school aid formula. It's difficult, but there's a possibility there. Criminal justice, both sides want it. Again, it's still hard to take those votes, especially if, as our reporter Brian Mackey has reported, to really get a quarter of the state's prison population down, that is going to not just be, okay, let's deal with decriminalization of marijuana, something that already had been a tough thing for Rauner and legislators to get agreement on. But the tough stuff, I mean, it's going to be hard because there's an ideological divide, but also, yes, there is, I think, mistrust coming from both angles and really politics from both angles as well.
Well, it seems to me that that if there is really some, you know, newfound approach to working together at the Capitol, that they would get down to business and start trying to do that soon. But I have a feeling that with a budget speech only, you know, 3 weeks away, that nothing's going to happen until then. And who knows, even after that time, we still have elections coming up. So anybody that's thinking there is going to be some immediate thaw in the relations, it strikes me this is going to be something that's going to drag itself right to the end of the, at least of the scheduled legislative session, maybe beyond once again. Does anybody think that something could happen much sooner than that?
Well, I would say that if you look at it just in terms of the lawmakers themselves and the politics of having to take tough votes, if in fact the governor and the legislative leaders decided, yeah, we are going to sit down, we're going to put aside our differences, and we're going to work on putting together a budget, and it's going to take some tough votes, it's going to take people voting for tax increases, they can do it without jeopardizing anybody. You have a structured roll call. There are enough people who are in safe seats that they could vote for it. They may not want to, and it may cause them a little heartburn, but it's not going to cost them their seats. And the problem is, if you look through some of the proposals that the governor had, very good proposals, as we mentioned, on prison reform, one of the reasons that our prisons are overpopulated is we have a terrible recidivism rate. Roughly half the people who will be let out of prison today, within 3 years, they'll be back. We don't do enough to rehabilitate prisoners. We need more programs for rehabilitation, more programs to deal with substance abuse. All that costs money. Same thing on revamping the school formula. The governor said he didn't want, and I'm paraphrasing now, he didn't want anybody to lose, but to do that, to put more money into the poor districts while not taking any away from the wealthier districts, it takes more dollars. And there were a number of things that are really strong ideas. He's creating a new IT agency to try and bring Illinois maybe into the 20th century, if not the 21st, in terms of all its technology infrastructure. That's going to cost money. The reason we're so behind is because investing in new technology has never been a high priority for any governor in recent years. So it's all going to take money, so we're going to have to raise taxes. That's the only way around it. And it strikes me that it's going to take Republicans and Democrats together putting proportionate shares on that roll call to send it to the governor. The governor's going to have to sign it.
Well, one thing that they did not apparently come to an agreement on this week was funding for higher education. Amanda, a piece of legislation did move a bit. It moved out of committees and then moved on the floor as well with Democratic votes. And that would have provided some money for what's known as the Monetary Award Program, which is a low-income scholarship money for students, and then also some money for community colleges. I know Republicans have their own plan that didn't seem to go anywhere. Where does this whole thing stand as we speak at this point?
You know, I have described the bill that did pass in swift fashion, and this is one of those areas where we talked a lot about why things were stalling before. we are in a new year now. So it did not get a veto-proof majority in order to make its way to the governor and take effect immediately. But now that we are in 2016, didn't need that. A simple majority was enough for Democrats alone to get this passed, and it really just happened in a morning, in a matter of hours. So when they want something to happen, they can get it done. But I described it, as I said, as a bit of a, on a way to a death march to the governor, because Rauner has said he's going to veto it. First of all, Rauner has called for changes in higher education. Second of all, it's one of the few outlying pressure points. If he does want to get the turnaround agenda passed, that's one way of looking at it. So right now you have a measure that supposedly would help really all universities. They're the ones that would get the reimbursement for MAP funding right now. You have where some schools are fronting that subsidy for low-income college students that depend on this grant from the state. Other schools that say they can't anymore, and that's put the students who needed this help in order to pay to get a higher education, some of them SOL, either not getting degrees, not being able to pay up, or fearful that they're not going to be able to go to school next year because, of course, there's no budget solution for the future. So, a lot of confusion right now. This is where that partisanship, that distrust, that kind of anger foments, because Republicans are upset that they can't get a hearing on their version, which they say does provide a funding formula or a funding mechanism to pay for the money that would be spent on MAP community colleges. And then their version also would send money to four-year schools for operations versus the Democratic version leaving that out. But you got to kind of wonder and question, okay, so what is the Republican answer? It's not any new revenue area or one specific program. It's giving the governor a whole lot of management power. One Democrat described it as giving him king-like abilities to really what it would be would whack the budget in other areas.
Well, Doug, haven't they done that before? Haven't they given governors that opportunity to have that say over the budget?
The Democratic lawmaker who made the king-like powers comment, though, would insist that when they've done it in the past, it wasn't as extensive as what Rauner was asking for this last week. So, I know he wants flexibility to move things around, and the Democrats probably aren't going to give him that flexibility, once again, because of this distrust level. They don't trust him to use it in a responsible manner, at least in their minds. Whether they did or not, though, it doesn't solve the fundamental problem that the state is spending a lot more money than it's taking in, and you can move MAP grants or community colleges to the head of the pack for bill paying, but that means somebody else is going to be shoved to the back and going to have to wait longer to get paid. And in the meantime, the already giant mountain of unpaid bills keeps getting bigger.
I do want to save some time to talk. As we sat down to record this show, we were getting word and reports that the former Senate President Phil Rock had passed away. And I wanted to give some time to talk a little bit more about Phil Rock and his legacy in state government. Charlie, you probably covered him certainly more than anybody here on this program. You know him well. Talk about Phil Rock. What was he like as a Senate leader, as a politician in Illinois?
Well, yeah, I had the privilege of covering Senator Rock from the time he first was elected to the Senate in the early 1970s until the time that he left in the early 1990s. For me, Phil Rock embodied what a political leader in Illinois should be. He was a partisan, certainly. He was a fierce Democrat, defended Democratic values, defended the party. But also, when push came to shove, he was one who was, as I mentioned earlier, willing to say, okay, to his Republican colleagues, we'll disagree on these ideas. Here are areas we can work on to advance the state of Illinois. And he was often referred to, sometimes by more partisan people in a derogatory fashion, as being a, quote, statesman. And he was seen as the guy who would be the fierce partisan. And back then, the legislative sessions ran through June. So in January, February, March, April, Rock would be as tough a partisan as anybody. But along about mid-May on into June, it would be, okay, we're going to negotiate. governor, and he was with Republican governors all this time, with the exception of the 4 years of Dan Walker. Governor, what do you need? Here's what we need. Where can we find common ground? And I think that's kind of what's lacking today, in the sense that you don't have the sense that the leadership is that anxious to find common ground. And part of it may be, as we mentioned earlier, the Democrats aren't really sure if they can trust Bruce Rauner. Whereas back in the day when I was covering, and there were Republican governors like Jim Thompson, Jim Edgar, and George Ryan, you could trust them.
The handshake basically was good enough.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, even George Ryan, who wound up going to prison, was someone whose word was his bond. And there was not this worry about, well, in our private meeting he agreed to do this, but then 20 minutes later he's out at a news conference saying something else. That was one of Blagojevich's problems, that he had no trust. And so, yeah, for me, Rock, as I say, he would be my ideal of what a successful political leader should be in Illinois.
Doug, I think you had a chance to cover him some as well. So any thoughts you have about Phil Rock?
I only had a relatively brief time covering him. And all I can say is I echo everything that Charlie said from my experience with him. I wonder how much of his compromisability stemmed from the fact that he had a caucus that was fairly diverse. And I think before I got there anyway, didn't he have a few problems keeping everyone in line, Charlie, or am I mistaken about that?
Oh, no, yeah, there were leadership battles. At that time, the Senate Democrats, there were, I think, three or four sessions in a row where they had fierce leadership battles. And as a matter of fact, at one point, Governor Thompson tried to declare the minority Republicans their leader, the Senate president, because in one of the roll calls, Senator David Shapiro, who was the Republican leader, had more votes than any of the Democrats. Ultimately, it went to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, no, you have to have the constitutional majority. To be Senate president, you have to have 30 votes. And so Senator Rock had to accommodate. He had to accommodate downstaters. He had to accommodate the Black caucus. He had to be aware of the concerns of some of the white ethnics in Chicago. So, yeah, he was very much a conciliator within his own ranks.
Amanda, I'm going to save a few minutes as well, because other news that was breaking this morning as well was President Obama, it appears, will be coming to Springfield, to the state capitol, for a speech that's coming up. And that's going to be happening here in just a couple of weeks. What do we know about that?
We don't know much. This is all pretty new. The Chicago Tribune has confirmed it. We're still kind of really working to get the full word, but it appears as if, yes, coming back to Springfield, Illinois, where apparently will give remarks at the General Assembly. So the plan would be to talk about, and everybody get this, bipartisanship and really trying to bring lawmakers together. Of course, I think a lot of people would find that interesting, that maybe Obama, who people would say has struggled with that in Washington, D.C., what advice might he have to give here to Springfield lawmakers, where there is hyperpartisanship and this historic stalemate? But he's at least going to try. Governor Bruce Rauner did cite President Obama during his State of the State address, saying that, hey, I want redistricting in Illinois. Obama supports that too. Rauner did also say that Obama supports term limits, and the best that I know reporters have been looking, nobody has ever been able to find Obama talking about any support for term limits. So maybe it'll work, because we already have had, evidently, the governor and Obama in agreement, or at least Rauner sees it that way.
Well, Doug, let me ask you, because we certainly have heard the president talk just recently in his State of the State speech. He talked about how he felt that is something he regrets, is just seeing the political divide in the country. But here in the state of Illinois, I can't imagine that even the president coming, well, that will be an interesting day. And I'm sure the Republicans and Democrats will both give him the respect, you know, the presidency deserves. I can't imagine it's going to do much to solve the problems here.
I can't either because in recent years, I would argue that the Illinois General Assembly has more and more taken on the tones of Washington as far as partisan divides. And I don't know that the president coming here and delivering what would presumably be a comparatively short speech is going to turn anything around.
Charlie, when's the last time a sitting president came to speak to the General Assembly? I don't recall that in my lifetime, but maybe it's happened.
The last one that I can recall, and I may be missing one in there, was Jimmy Carter, who came towards the end of his term.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and spoke to a joint session of the General Assembly.
And how was that received?
Oh, it was received with the proper respect and decorum of the office. And it was interesting because it came at a time when the legislature had voted itself a lame duck pay raise. Governor Thompson vetoed it using the auto pen because he was vacationing in South Carolina at the time. And he vetoed it quickly enough that the legislature could override the veto. And that, in a way, and this is getting back into ancient history, that was the impetus behind Pat Quinn's petition drive to cut the size of the Illinois House. And in fact, Thompson almost tearfully apologized in his inaugural address after that. This was in this would have been in 1978, I believe. He apologized after that for going along with this pay raise.
Well, it's time now for notes from the field. Charlie, do you have something this week?
Well, I alluded earlier to the fact that the governor wants to create a new information technology agency, and he appointed his IT guru, Hardik Bhatt, to head up the effort for the new department to try and bring together the probably hundreds of different computer systems in the different agencies, many of which can't talk to each other, and some of which are so old that you can't even find parts for them anymore. And I read it at one point, the programming is so old that the people who actually knew how to write in that language aren't around anymore. So this is a thing that's got to be done. As the governor says, it can save us money, it can make us more efficient, but as I alluded to earlier in the program, it's going to take money to upgrade this stuff.
Amanda, let me check in with you real quick.
Yeah, and actually, Governor Rauner says he was in high school the last time a lot of this software got an update, and the technology director was 2 years old. So that helps maybe to put it in perspective. I will say congratulations to Kristen Richards. She will be the new chief of staff for Senate President John Cullerton. So that is happening here in Springfield, and congratulations to her.
And Doug Finke, about 30 seconds.
Another thing from the speech, the governor said he wants to redo state purchasing laws. They were changed in the wake of Rod Blagojevich to kind of tighten things up. The governor says that what has happened is it's created tons of paperwork and become a bureaucratic nightmare, and he wants to streamline it.
All right. Well, that will do it for today's State Week in Review. Members for the broadcast include Charlie Wheeler with the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, Amanda Vinicky, and Doug Finke with the State Journal Register. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or you can search WUIS on iTunes. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.